Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back. Happy December. I am, as always, so excited to be here with you and so excited to have this incredibly beautiful human on my podcast, Dr. Nita Bhushan, who is not only an amazing human, but has been a friend of mine for the past decade. I think Nita and I had 10 different connections. And one day we had our very first date at, wait for it, a Whole Foods. And I was riveted by this beautiful young girl who has come such an amazingly long way since I met her. When I met Nita, she was single. She was a thriving business owner, dental practices, and knew that life was calling her in a different direction. She wanted to pursue something bigger than her. She wanted to be more well. She's been through unspeakable tragedy, and I'm going to have her tell you her story. She wanted to find love, and Nita has become a serial entrepreneur. She sold her dental practices. She is an author. She is a three-time international best-selling author and now a world-renowned international health advocate. She's founded the Global Grit Institute. She has gotten married to her soulmate. She has two little kids. Nita, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Woo! It's so good to be here, love. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Bella.
I'm so happy to have you here. And guys, why did I bring Nita on today? Because last week I talked to you guys about becoming psychotically optimistic, because the holidays can suck for a lot of us. They can make us feel alone and lonely and have us asking, God, why me? Why am I still alone? And all of that suck. Now, speaking of suck, my friend Nita wrote an amazing book called, wait for it, That Sucked, Now What? Which is like the perfect title to Nita's life. So Nita, congratulations on your book. Let's get into this. Tell us about the suck that has happened to you for the last 20 years of your life and where you are now.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. We're going to go all the way back. Well,
let's go.
Let's tell everybody
why you're here and the fire that you have walked through, girl, and prevailed, and how you're going to teach all of my beautiful singles how to help embrace the suck.
We're going to go in and embrace the suck. So it actually started out, funny enough, in December. So December was when I hit my fall and like the biggest fall of my life. I thought I had this like picture perfect marriage and this picture perfect dream, you know, home life that I had built. And December 31st, 2011, I was brought down to my knees and I was looking in the mirror and I finally saw myself, like finally saw myself and finally understood that I was living this lie, that I was in this toxic, abusive marriage, and that I was living my life for everybody else. And despite the fact that I was, to the outside, this cosmetic dentist with this incredible practice, I was not even 30 at the time. I had thought I had built everything up along the side, but I looked at the mirror for the first time on December 31st, hearing the crowd and the cheer from the outside, hearing fireworks. And for me, I'm sobbing for the very first time to myself in my master bedroom of this five-story home. And I finally acknowledged and said, I'm in an abusive relationship. I felt like I was just mentally torn, emotionally, completely spiritually dead. And for that first time, I got up and I had to make moves. I literally had to shift my life. That day would be the last day that I would see that life, that home, that person.
Why that day, Nita? What happened that day?
Yeah, that was the last time I would let him hit me in the face. And and this was going on for, 5 years. The marriage was, only 16 months, but we had been together a total of 5 years. And yeah, that was the day that I would pick up and leave to reclaim a life that was for me, because for the decade preceding this relationship, I had to go through tremendous loss. I recognized that I was hiding so much of the shame and guilt of where I came from, what I had been through in the face of this marriage, because I thought that getting married, this picture perfect marriage, we had this Indian wedding and it was like photographed and filmed and all of the big things. And it was this dream come true until it actually wasn't. And I had to get honest with myself. And what I was hiding was the fact that I didn't allow myself to grieve and to grieve the losses of my mom, my dad, and my brother. And that happened within a 5-year period between 16 and 19 in my life. And so I was left at 19 to raise my youngest brother, who was 14 at the time. And I thought, okay, well, I want to just recreate a family that I'd lost. So my coping mechanism in my early 20s, and really throughout my adolescence, when I was 16, when my mom was really sick, when I lost my brother, I would hold on to these relationships because I was so afraid of being alone. And I know that, this is a perfect podcast to talk about it, because I didn't realize it until finally December 31st, all I wanted to do was be alone. And I was faced to be alone for the very first time because I took the brave steps to leave that circumstance. And the biggest thing that I was so afraid of was, wow, I'm going to be judged. I am going to be talked about because, in our community, lo kya kenge, what will people think, right? And that was this like looming thing in my mind of, wow, people are not going to know that I'm broken, because I was so ashamed about the losses that I'd been through, because it was such a huge part of my life that I thought I could hide and shove underneath a rug until the rug got so big that I couldn't no longer avoid it anymore. I had to dive in. And that's when the healing began. That's when the party really started. That's when it got really juicy, because that's when I really had to invite coming back into myself and focusing on pretty much, the next 7 years of those healing years to focus on me.
Wow. And I hope you guys heard that. This woman who was a girl lost her mother to sickness, her brother to an asthma attack, and her father to cancer in 4 years between 15 and 19. I have an 18-year-old who just called me as Nita and I were getting ready to record. And my heart, it's like, I'm trembling. I cannot imagine having a daughter that is almost 19. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, the tunnel of fire you have walked through, and to create what you thought, you had nobody advising you, no gurus, everybody you loved was gone. And now you were a caretaker, and little Nita decides to make mom and dad proud and marry the perfect Indian boy with the perfect life and the 5-story house and all of the things, to then realize finally at the age of 30 that this is all a freaking facade. And for the first time, you're like, fuck it, I'm not going to keep sweeping it under the rug anymore. I'm done. And you walk away. And for all of that, I salute you. Seems so trite for what I'm feeling. I don't have the right words. And I know you then decided to go on your own personal journey. You left the marriage. You sold your practice. You yeah. have become a coach to help people out of their suck. And you have articulated the road that you have been down and how you got out of your stuff. And now how you're teaching people, okay, that sucked. And you certainly have had more suck, my friend, than the majority of us combined into five lifetimes. So let's talk about the suck. Like you said,
yeah,
it sucks. We're all going to go through horrible things when we're human, right? There is going to be suck, but we all have a choice. Tell us, there's a chapter in your book called The Victim Mentality.
Oh, yeah.
And I think so many of us, especially you, going through what you've been through, you can look at your life and say, God, why me? Haven't I had enough? Haven't you punched me in the face enough times? When do I get a break? Why me? Talk to us about the victim mentality, what it is, why it's destructive, and how the hell we get out of it.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, so recognizing that during that time, even, you know, that I was a victim of domestic violence, but I didn't want to really live there. I was a victim of, you know, losing my family. And I knew that one of the solid anchors that I've always had, just remembering my parents, the mantras that I grew up with, when my dad would pray for 3 hours every Sunday in his meditation room, and he would just be chanting and chanting 108 times. He had the mala beads, and we would be young little kids running around, not knowing any better, and trying to take the mala beads out of the like puja room. And he would go chase us back, and he wouldn't say anything. He would just chase us, grab his beads, go back into, and he was so dedicated. But because I had that as like a constant in my life, I knew that faith was such a huge part of the journey. And I was raised, my mom was Filipino. We did, you know, we did Catholic church on Sundays. My dad was Hindu, but he was Sikh as well. You know, in that part of Punjab, he went to both of the things. So he was like, let's bring everything into the mix. It doesn't matter. We'll go to everything. So for me to grow up with such a stronghold on spirituality, were there times where I was so angry because I was like, what the heck is happening? Like, how could you even have faith? And I remember vividly when I was 16 years old and, you know, people coming to my mom's funeral and giving me all of these books, because really at 16, all you want to do is really fit in, right? You don't want to be the one that lost her mom.
Yeah.
And God forbid, a year later, going through it the same time again,
unbelievable.
Like immediately a year later, and on your youngest brother's 12th birthday, and you're left with, nobody knows what to say. We're not taught how to, you know, have these difficult conversations or even being there for another friend, let alone as a dating partner. Like, everyone was in shock. And so, but what we did have was, we had music. What we did have was the chanting at the mothers and at all of these places. And so when I talk about victim mentality in the book, you know, I want to be very, you know, very, very forthcoming, because I know that some of you right now may have been in an actual victim mentality where you were the victim, where
you were the victim, legit victim,
something go, yeah, painfully going through. And maybe you were a victim of violence, sexual abuse. Maybe there are some of those things that, you know, and I want to honor that and I want to respect you for it. And some of us might be living, because I was that victim, but some of us might be actually living in the victim mindset and that victim mentality, where there's a story in my book about Pri, who she was one of my clients, and she was going on all the dating apps. She finally found a guy and she got ghosted. And she went into her victim spiral, and the spiral of, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough. I'm not pretty enough. Oh, look at other people. It on this comparison spiral. And it's so easy to do that when everything around you is going wrong. And I think it's great to say that sucked and to embrace and sit in the suck. Because for me, I didn't sit in the suck for almost 2 decades. I was charting along, shoving things under a rug, stuffing it in the back closet because I didn't want to be the one that didn't fit in. I wanted to fit in. I just wanted to have some sense of quote unquote normalcy, even though I knew my path was kind of not normal by any means. Yet that victim mindset, if we are stuck in the suck, if we think our entire world revolves around the one instance or the two instances or the three instances that we got rejected or got ghosted or got burned, then we've got to work on changing that mindset. And for me, it was, okay, there's this reality, but then there's also a survivor reality where, whoa, you've survived through something. You've been through something. And now you actually have some of the tools to maybe take some personal responsibility. I can't take personal responsibility for the losses that I've had, but can I take personal responsibility for how I am going to deal with the healing part of that? Because what I've learned is that there are ways to now integrate some of the hard sucks in life to then say, all right, now what? What is that action step? And I think for so many of us, especially, you know, for all the singles in the room, and I was this way too, I would go between, oh, man, I'm not ready for it yet. Or I don't know, my heart's going to just get broken again. Or, you know, I was celibate for 2 years after my divorce because I was afraid. And I was like trying to do the work and saying yes to doing the work, but then retreating back and saying, ooh, I don't know. But what I really, really needed to focus on was healing that little girl in me. And each of us have a little person in herself that at one point was stuck in the suck, was stuck in the victim mentality, and she couldn't move forward. And we have to honor that part. Now, I couldn't move forward into the now what, the victor, until I acknowledge my vulnerability in the, okay, that really sucked. I see you. I see the little girl in you that just wanted love, that just wanted to recreate a family. And that's all you knew, to have compassion for that little girl. And now you get to choose. So you get to choose who enters in your life. But in order to choose, we've got to take the risks and we've got to say yes to get out of the suck, which means, and I talk about a concept in the book called the bounce factor, which I know we'll get to, but one of the things of the bounce factor that I talk about is we have to embrace good stress. We've got to invite ourselves to do some hard things, which means say yes to new experiences. Say yes to, for me, it was working with the coaches and the therapists that would forever, ever, ever change my life and change my trajectory. Yay. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I went into coaching and investing in coaching and even starting a coaching company because of the experience that I've had with, you know, people like you, Bella.
Nita, tell us something you wrote about in your book, which I absolutely love, about the Stoics. Talk about amor fati.
Yes. Oh, wow. Oh gosh, you know, right after my dad passed away. So it was my mom, my brother, and my dad. And I was like, I need to get out of Chicago. My soul was yearning for an experience. And I just needed to, I'm done. I can't, I need to live on for me. I couldn't go away to college. I got into all of the colleges. I couldn't go away. So after my dad died, it was the summer that I turned 21, and I begged my aunt and my grandmother. They were the matriarchs in my family. My aunt was my dad's sister. My grandmother was my mom's mother. And they were the ones kind of like wolf pack that raised or helped raise my brother and I. And my aunt, my bua, was like, there's no way you're going. Absolutely not. And I'm like, I need this. Cause I'm going to dental school. I need all of the things. So I made this thing up around why I needed to be there. Well, I ended up going on a study abroad trip to Italy. And that was dream come true for me, because for the first time ever, getting off that plane in Roma at the campus there, they had a Loyola campus there in Rome. And it was oh my God. And I was taking, Italian philosophy. And basically the first day in my Italian philosophy course, they're talking about the Stoics. And that was my first kind of foray into, you know, the term amor fati, which is love of one's fate. And it was so, I mean, this couldn't be more poignant for my journey, because I was like, didn't want to tell people what I had been through, because everyone was introducing themselves. You know, that's always like the weird, awkward question, like, oh, tell me about you. Where'd you grow up? What do your parents do? And like, I hated that question, because for me, it meant, fuck, I've got to share, like, all right, I got to let all the cat out of the bag, you know, right now. And then I'm going to be the one that, like, so I was so afraid to share. So I would always deflect it. So that was like my quick, you know, early stage coaching skills. I would say, tell me about you, tell me more about you. So, but it was in this Italian philosophy class in Rome of all places where I fell in love with the term amor fati. And we learned about, you know, Marcus Aurelius, who was, you know, one of the Italian greats who, you know, ruled Italy, but he was all about loving, and the Stoics were all about loving one's fate no matter what. And it then had me think everything, you know, comes at its place for a reason, right? I was meant to go through this. And, you know, I think it's been part of my spiritual upbringing as well. And always thinking that, fine, my parents, and this was like the turning point, having heard this term and spending this time in Italy, it was like such a cathartic and healing practice for me, because for the first time ever, I wasn't having to worry if somebody was going to die, because guess what? The worst had already happened, unfortunately. And two, I could literally spread my wings, and I was in this foreign country, new students, nobody knew me. I could actually, you know, choose to share whatever felt right and maybe not choose to share. And so that's how I became such a great question asker during these times. But really it all kind of snapped into place around the amor fati of really loving our fate, no matter what the circumstance was. And that allowed for the, you know, really the greatest healing.
This concept is so important. Amor, A-M-O-R, fati, F-A-T-I. And like Nita said, it's about loving your fate. And it doesn't mean it didn't suck. And it doesn't mean it didn't hurt. But it means, okay, I have, you know, told you guys many times, I've been a student of people like some of the greatest people that I think are on earth. And Tony Robbins always says, can you find the meaning in your mess, right? Okay, that sucked, says Dr. Nita. Now, what is the meaning? Does it mean there wasn't a mess? No, it means, okay, now what can I do with this? I have a choice of how I respond. And in the dating world, so many of us have been ghosted. We've been disappointed. We've been betrayed. We've been cheated on. We've been hit. We've been emotionally bruised. We've been blindsided. We've been divorced, right? And while nobody would ever say, well, suck it up, buttercup, it's okay. You know what? Here is my story, and here's the vat of soup that I'm standing in. Now what? What can I do? What's the meaning that I can find in these circumstances that I'm in at this point? And think about it for yourself, dear listener. Are you that person? Are you the person that's been ghosted? Maybe you never got the love from your parents that you wanted, and you don't know how to love. Maybe you can say to yourself, God, I've never been in love. I don't know that I've been in love. I don't know that anybody has ever loved me. Am I lovable? And asking yourself a million questions, could somebody love me the way I yearn to be loved without, you know, riding a tractor over my heart again and again? And knowing the simple fact of the matter is, yes, you can have everything. But the first step is saying, okay, here's where I am now. And now, what is the lesson here? What can I take from this? How can I move forward? Tell me if I got the concept right.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Such a queen of that. And I think that, you know, to add to that, it's really embracing the vulnerability of the suckiness of that moment, because it's not like we can change our fate. You know, the Stoics, Marcus Aurelius, Seneca, you know, all of the greats, they were actually anticipating the suck many times over. And that's really what made them so uniquely placed in, you know, perhaps I feel like sometimes, you know, going too overboard where they didn't even allow themselves to feel. So that's like, you know, step number two is to then allow yourself to experience the suck. But I think, Bella, to your point, you know, especially when we are dating, like I can even share for myself. Yeah. For those 2 years, I was scared. I was, until I got support and dove into the healing and dove into the reasons why. So with Amor Fati, we're saying, yeah, that really sucked and we can't change it. We can only make peace with it. We can try to start integrating it, to start seeing how does this new perspective that has shifted in my life, am I going to think all men suck? Am I going to think all, you know, because I dated and I was married to an Indian man, all Indian men suck, which for a while was my story. And it actually prevented me. And I'm going to get real with you because I love you. And I think for your listeners, you know, I think that's only fair. But that was my story for the longest time, right? We think, oh, okay, I'm not going to date this person or this kind of person, or all men with blue eyes. And we start generalizing why that can't be our person, or, you know, from a certain race or a certain culture, because that one bad experience happened, but that was one bad experience, right? Exactly. And I think for me, it really, like I had to focus on my self-healing, which then took me to Bali, Indonesia. And I made a pledge. I literally made a pledge to myself. And this was after having worked with coaches and having worked with therapists, and I did all sorts of different healing. And this was the commitment that I had to myself to say, okay, I'm going to marry myself. I know it sounds so cheesy and it sounds so lame and it sounds so weird. However, listeners, listen up, because this was my first time that I'm actually saying, I value me first. I see the little girl in me that just wanted to feel seen and feel heard and feel loved. And I'm going to do that for myself now. And no matter what, I'm going to honor who I am in whatever relationship it is. And that meant that, okay, well, I'm going to take myself on dates. I am going to, you know, take care of me how I would want my partner to treat me. And before then, I felt like I was trying to wait for like Prince Charming to come along, where I'm like, no, I actually have to be the queen, the queen charmer of my life. And it only happened until I had somebody else to reflect back with me, somebody like you. So someone, you know, the listeners listening in, to reflect back and say, well, what parts of this are you willing to let go of? And how are you willing to show up in relationship? And so, and literally I journaled, I have this whole, you know, this was 2015. And so get this, it's 2015, February, I met my now husband 2 months later. We reconnected 2 months later after I had that, you know, full, epiphany and reclamation for myself, this ritual that I had for myself.
Taking care of yourself.
And finally, taking care of myself, prioritizing myself.
And what did you do? You sold your business. Like, tell people, what did that
mean?
Yes. Yes. Give us your specifics.
So here's what happened in the years that I began to fall in love with myself. I began to date myself. I became so unapologetic in how I wanted to lead my life because I was so focused on being that people pleaser, saying yes to everybody around me, being that martyr, because I thought, okay, I learned that growing up, happiness meant that you have to serve other people and your cup is last. But when I started to put my needs first, when I started to say, okay, I'm going to go to this meditation retreat. I'm going to actually work with these coaches or sign up for this program or go to this retreat or go to this networking event and just say yes to the things that many times scare us, to the things that many times we think that, okay, it may or may not go in a certain way because we need to be certain about things. When we are okay with the uncertainty, we can just say, all right, well, that sucked. Now what? We're not afraid of, oh man, if I go on this date, if this doesn't happen, then oh, like, what's that going to say about me? Like for a while, I just was like unattached to all dating. So it was like, all right, I'm going to go and experience this person. And it's okay if he's not my person. I'm going to thank that person for showing up in my life, but I'm not going to take it personally that I'm not good at dating or my picker is broken. I'm just going to say, all right, this is what it is, and still say yes and not get jaded to the whole idea of dating. Because I think a lot of times, you know, at least in that stage of my life, I had to say, he's coming for me. He's coming. He's coming. And for those who are listening, they are coming. You're doing the work and you're just every single person that you're meeting is getting you closer and closer. So when I was getting really unapologetic about that, and there's a concept in the book that I talk about, and it's called the fly forward framework, where you have a fall or a breakup or something tragic or crazy or big happens, where you actually then stage two, you have to have that ignition, the fire under the belly, the fact that, are you going to stay in this relationship or are you going to go somewhere else? Are you going to stay or say no? Are you going to still be in this relationship or leave? Then we get into the rising stage. And for me, the rising stage meant that I'm going to focus on me before I get into the magnify stage, which is stage four. The magnify stage is really, all right, I'm going to keep blossoming. And guess what? I'm saying yes to these dates, but I'm also letting go of what no longer serves me, which meant that I wanted to do more. I wanted to invest in other women. I was creating my own communities. I started a nonprofit. And I sold my dental business. I sold the building that came along with it a few years later. I moved across country to San Francisco because I wanted to learn how the startup environment worked. And I was mentoring startup founders. And that's, you know, when Bella and I, she came to one of my, seminars at that time with so many of these founders. And I think it's when you're exposing yourself to, there's another concept I talk about in the book, good stress, doing the things that you wouldn't normally do, leaning into discomforting situations. If you don't normally go to a certain place to find people, maybe you're opening yourself up to it. Maybe that's not your cup of tea, but maybe you're saying, okay, let's see what I can learn from this. That's when the real magic happens. That's when the magic in the mess really happens, to talk about my subtitle in the book, is because then we are allowing ourselves to play and we're not getting attached to the outcome. And so when I met my now husband, we were in a different part of the world. We were in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. We then, a year later, would meet again at a speaking conference in India. And I was speaking at the same conference that he was, and I was finishing my first book. And it was every single time when we met, it was always in a different country. And I said yes to the adventure, but with a caveat. And Bella, you'd be very proud of me, because I felt like I was retracting back to my same patterns. And I talk about this in the book, where when you're at a stage, stage five is thriving. And when you're at a stage of where you know that, all right, your heart's been broken before and you're still afraid of opening yourself up. Mm-hmm. So I was like 1 foot in and 1 foot out, but you know, you're in the thriving stage. So I had to, you know, I have these prompts and journal prompts in the book throughout the book, but I had to do what I say in the book, which was, all right, I know that I am maybe being reserved and cautious right now, but can I also lean into curiosity? Can I also lean into excitement? Can both of these feelings coexist at the same time, because I'm human and there's still part of me that's tender, but am I going to lead with honesty, because guess what I want in a partner? The very first thing that I want is honesty. So am I going to be honest in conveying that to Ajit, which was my partner at the time? Well, we were starting to do the dance of dating, even though I thought I was going to self-sabotage again and say, no, you know, we're both right. traveling.
See you in the Bahamas in a year, since we just keep meeting in other,
right.
in
like,
other countries.
You know, he's traveling. I don't know. We may not. And I just said, hey, you know, I'm at the stage of my life. I had to be honest. So I had to go first. I had to be vulnerable, which is what I'm sharing, is that it is so, it's so fearful because you feel like you're going to wear your heart on your sleeve. But if you want that person to also be that way, perhaps go first. And I had to say, hey, if you're willing to do this dance, do you want to, I'm going to be in New York for a couple months. He's like, I'm going to be in San Diego for a few months. Let's meet in the middle. And that's when we started to do the dance, and 10 cities around the world. And a year and a half later, we had our very first ceremony.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. 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 And you led with honesty and vulnerability, right? And what you got back was exactly that. And a great husband and 2 great kids. And let's circle back again. There's some concepts in your book that I want to make sure that we don't bounce over, no pun intended. Let's talk about, you alluded very quickly to 2 things that I want to relate to in the dating and relationship context. Let's talk about bounce factor, what that is, and how we can positively affect our bounce factor. And then we'll talk about flying forward and the 5 steps to doing that in dating. So tell us about bounce.
Oh, yes. Let's bounce. So the bounce factor. So I got, you know, during the journey, I got asked to speak at several places because of my story, obviously. And I started becoming and gaining this recognition as like the queen of grit, the queen of resilience. And when my first book came out, and you'll really appreciate this, Bella, I was asked to speak in Palo Alto. And Palo Alto, for those of you listeners who don't know, it's where the folks from the tech world, they send their children. And during that time, they had lost a few kids in their school to suicide. And so they had asked me to come on to share my story. And they said, can you build resilience without going through really adverse things in life? Can you build resilience? And for those of you who are single and trying to find relationships and are so, you know, getting jaded with the whole process, can you build resiliency without having to go through some of these things? And that really pegged a bigger, larger question that what I was actually dealing with, because I was dealing with my own heartbreak and losses. But it really set the precedence for the bounce factor, because what I have garnered now from that time is, yeah, there are 4 components to your bounce factor and how high you can bounce, and if you have any bounce at all, and what actually contributes to it. So if you feel that you are feeling jaded in the dating process, here's why. Well, first, have you actually made peace with your upbringing? Because many times, most often, and this is what I shared with that community as well, either we're born with tiger parents, either we're born with parents who are helicopter parents trying to figure everything out for us, or tiger parents who don't let us do anything. Or maybe you were raised not talking back to your elders in certain cultures, or maybe you were raised by a single mom who didn't really want to show emotion, or a narcissistic mom, or an emotionally unavailable father. There are all of these opportunities that we can heal, but it actually gets passed on to us. And then we carry this on in the way that we relate in our relationships. And then we go on and we attract a partner who we think should fix the parts of us that we haven't healed, like the broken relationship with our dad, or the fact that our mom was never there and we've been longing. So we have this mom wound or this dad wound that we have not yet healed. And it shows up in our upbringing. So that's the first piece. The second piece is the ability to increase our good stress. So the ability to lean into whether it's difficult conversations, whether it's going first, right? That vulnerability that I just shared. And if you're so used to people reading your mind, like how we would love that to happen. But in order to really get clear with our desires and what we want, we have to voice them. And that means we have to practice saying, I would really like if blank. But if you're a people pleaser, or if you are the martyr, or if you want people to like read your mind, that means that you have no bounds because you're not willing to put yourself under good stress. That's your current environment. That's step two, current environment, good stress. Step three is your emotional capacity to feel, your emotional capacity to feel the feels, which means, okay, when you're really upset, are you able to feel where you are getting upset? Actually feel it in your gut, feel it in your chest, feel it in your head. Like, where do you normally feel that? If you are angry or disappointed, are you able to fully experience it and embody it? Or are you one that's just like, all right, I'm going to just brush it off and what's next? And let me just go on dopamine hit because
right, I'm going to go for a run. I'll be back.
Just go for a run.
Gandhi. Vintage. I'm going to go for a run. I'll be back.
Go for a run to the
run
bar.
Away from it.
Is it rosé yet? 5 o'clock? Let me do that. You know, and that was me for a very long time, right? I would go and dance my sorrows out as an early 30s, go to the bars Thursday night. You know where I would be hitting up in Chicago, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That was what I was doing. And all of a sudden, Monday again, going to extreme sports. So I would train for triathlons. I would train for 100-mile bike rides. So that was, you know, in many ways, my release, but I didn't really allow myself to sit in that suck. So your emotional capacity to feel. And then finally, four is your radical self-awareness, your radical self-awareness. And when I mean radical self-awareness, your RSA, that is your ability to say, oof, that person, love bomber. Mm. Nah, no thanks. No thanks. Because I know the value that I bring to the table, or to really assess, okay, is this right for me? And maybe the people that maybe I have a pattern here. Maybe I keep saying yes to these people because I haven't yet healed part of my upbringing. That's why these types of people are getting attracted to me or getting magnetized towards me.
And I'm accepting them.
Yes. And not accepting them into your reality and actually saying no. That's building your radical self-awareness when it comes to dating. And so all of these four components comprise your ability to bounce when things get rough.
Right. And bounce, guys, that means you hit the ground, but you have levity, you have momentum, and you can recover and land on your feet again. And so much of this is exactly what having coaches around you helps you to do, because sometimes you can't see your own pattern. Sometimes you don't know. You're so in the suck that you're just like, I'm lonely. I'm going to take the next person that comes to me. It's better than being alone. And then it's same dude, different face, decade over decade, right? And that is not radical self-awareness either, right? That is radical, you know, self-sabotage to some extent. And it's not looking at me. What am I doing? I've told you guys the story of my story on this podcast so many times. The common denominator in all of my messes was this 5'3" little being, right? I accepted this stuff. I accepted the red flaggy people. I accepted the bad behavior, right? And once you look at yourself and say, I am where I am because of the choices I've made to some extent, or the hand that was dealt to me. But now I can choose amor fati. I can choose to find the meaning in my mess, and I can choose a better way. Right. And all of these things. And I love understanding your upbringing. Your upbringing is everything with regards to you guys that have worked with us. You know how much we talk about fixing your picker and attachment. And a couple of weeks ago, I had somebody come on the podcast who talked about family constellation therapy. And I know that you talk about generational trauma, Nita, and how it comes down from our great grandparents to our grandparents, to our parents, to us. So it's like,
that's one of my favorite things.
We are the trauma of our families, living, breathing, nature, nurture. Shit, who's going to help us through this, right? And the good news is there are so many ways and resources to help you through this. And we are all the sum total of our generational traumas. Nita and I both have parents that were immigrants. That's a massive trauma in and of itself. And then to be the children of immigrants, to have loss, to move so many times. I went to 8 different schools before I graduated high school, right? Because this is immigrants. You move. And every time you have to reinvent yourself, right? And okay, what did that make me do? It made me realize, okay, I can talk to anybody wherever I go, right? I can make friends with somebody over Zoom because I had to do this year over year over year, every other year changing schools. So, looking at those things and being self-aware. I suck at this. I'm good at this. So I'm going to get better at some of these things. So everything Nita is saying, you guys, is so amazing. And her book does such a great job at talking about this. And let's talk about, now that we know how to bounce, let's talk about how do we fly forward, Nita? What's our 5-step process as single people, or maybe as people like you and me in long-term relationships, right? Oof. Maybe we've got long-term friendships. We've got in-laws. How do we fly forward through the suck?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So flying forward starts out with recognizing you had a fall, or recognizing stage one, that you had a fall, and stage two, that there is that ignition, the ignite, that something has to change. Either you have to have a difficult conversation, or you have to, you're saying yes to yourself in this stage. And you're not spiraling into victim mentality anymore. You're going into a thriver's mindset because you know, okay, that's going into my old ways of how I used to do things. And when we get into that stage three, which is rising, now rising, when it comes into the dating world, the dating context, or even in our relationships, when we're rising, we're acting from a place of curiosity. We're acting from a place of, oh, I'm not going to judge him or her or they or whatever. We're just going to act like every day is a new day in relationship. Every day I am committed to rediscovering who I am in relationship and who my partner is, that we're not fixated on what they did yesterday or the dishes or what have you, or maybe their past, that we're going forward. We're moving forward. We're flying forward. And every day is a new day to play in that container. And then when we get into the magnify stage is really, it's not about you anymore. It's not about what you've been through. Now it's about the relationship that you want to grow with your partner, your love, your long lasting love relationship. And whether it is a new relationship or rekindling what you already have, maybe it's setting things on the calendar. Like for Ajit and I now, in this stage of our relationship with having littles, we have date night set. And actually 3 out of the 4 times in the month, because we know we have an intention to set that, that's going to happen 75% of the time, which is great. And if it happens the 4th time, great. But we know with life, you know, it's not like a zero-sum game. It's not like black or white. We have to have some flow. We have to have some grace. And so if we can do it, you know, 80% of the time, great. If it happens 50% of the time, great. But we know that it's a standard on our calendar. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to, you know, get mad at him if it's like, okay, he's like, babe, something happens. But it is, the thing is it's in our intention and it's blocked on the calendar. So that's one of the ways. And if you are actually dating yourself right now, you can block time in your calendar when you're in the magnify stage to say, all right, this is that time for me. This is that solo time for me, for that bath time, that walk, that time to reflect for me and nobody else. That's when you're in the magnify stage, when you know that all right, well, there could be some times where I still feel like, I don't know, I'm not ready for this long-term commitment, or I'm going to have these weird thoughts in my head and think, is this relationship going to last? But you now know how to regulate yourself. You now know with the tools that I have in my book to help you combat some of these feelings that we have, which are absolutely normal because we are human. But then we get into the thriving stage, and the thriving stage is, it's no longer a sense that we're going to, like, we're not afraid of falling again, because we know that at this stage, we're actually flourishing. We know that at this stage, that if we have a fight, it doesn't mean it's the end of the world. Fighting is actually a good thing. That means repair, reconciliation. And in a really good, healthy relationship, we want to know how we fight, because the repair, it actually invites more ways to build a stronger bridge and a bond. And I know that, Bella, you talk a lot about this in strong relationships, but the way that we fight tells us everything. And that's the juicy part, because the repair is so good, it actually brings up the best. And that's where we know we're in thriving, because we know we're not going to say, ah, a fight means that, oh no, this isn't going to last. A fight just means, okay, how can we actually twist the puzzle pieces so it fits differently, so that at this stage in our lives, we're actually going to be a different couple, or at this stage of our relationship, whether it's 2 months in, 3 months in, 6 months in, I might have to ask a different question to get to know her or him a little bit better. And that's actually beautiful.
In our house, and even in my extended family, I mean, I've got a husband, two teenagers, I have a brother, a sister-in-law, parents, and we say conflict is nothing to be feared. You're gentle with your words, because your words are knives, and knives leave scars when we put them on the skin. Mm-hmm. But look at conflict as a way to say, I need this and you need this. How do we get to a better place? So never view conflict when you come from a place of love, and saying, you look at your relationship like you would rock climbing. With every conflict comes a higher step up towards the peak of a solid, happy relationship. That's how you thrive. So let me go back to, let's pretend we're going into peak dating season right now. Ooh. And lots of our listeners, you know, maybe they've been broken up with, maybe they're like, oh, I hate online dating, I'm so jaded. Like, blah. Do I have to do this again? Because Bella is constantly saying January, it's going to be the busiest online dating date of the year. If we want to fly forward for peak dating season, take a single person through the five steps. Maybe it's a jaded dater, a man or woman. So now we're falling. We're on the ground. We're like, dating sucks. I hate the apps. There's no good people out there. There's nobody out there for me. I suck. I'm too old. I'm too damaged. I'm too heavy. All of that stuff. We're on the ground. Is that falling? Like, where?
That is falling. That is falling. You're in the falling stage. Yep. That's falling stage. Absolutely.
Okay. So that's falling. So now we're on the ground. So for all of you, if you can listen to me, who's on the ground? Who's fallen? Me, right? Okay. Everybody's on the ground. Now we've fallen. Now, what's the next step, Nita? How do we ignite ourselves and fly forward? It's peak dating season. I want to ignite every single one of you right now, to put a spark under your booty and get it going and ignite you to do something. How do we do that? How do we ignite ourselves? If you don't have Bella Gandhi and Smart Dating Academy nipping at your little heels to get up and ready for peak dating season, how does one ignite themselves? Now you're on the ground, you've fallen.
Yeah, you're falling. You're asking a different question. You're probably saying, I need help.
I need help.
And I need help is the first step. I don't want to do what I've already done or I've been doing because I'm meant for more. Ooh. That's when you are sparking the light within you, because before you probably saw the light, it was trying to spark, but you kept going back into that circle. Now you're igniting and you're asking a different question. You're saying, I'm not good at this. I'm not that good at this. I keep hearing what Bella has to say. Maybe it's time I work with her. I work with somebody. I actually say yes to a different part of myself that's yearning for more, because I know I'm meant for more. Mm. That's the first question, to acknowledge that there is something better. There is that next potential, that next level of potential in you to do something radically different that you've never done before. For me, it was leaving my marriage. For me, it was saying yes to a brand new life. For me, it was saying no more to dentistry. For you, it might just be getting support, saying yes to somebody that you wouldn't normally date, because you probably are like, actually, all right, I've dated these types of people for a really long time. I'm going to say yes to this person. That person is trying to set me up with somebody. All right, I'm going to say yes, because what's the worst that could happen? You actually have a really good conversation.
I love that. And then what's next?
And then when we get into igniting, so we're actually developing a new reality for ourselves, we're rising. So think about every time you are saying yes to something that is scary, to something that is so completely out of your comfort level that you're kind of like, oh, okay, I'm actually developing this level of confidence in myself. I'm actually kind of liking dating people that I wouldn't normally have said yes to, because you're finding that amor fati. You're saying, all right, so c'est la vie. This is it. We're seizing the moment as well. And when we're rising, we're actually developing a new skill of putting ourselves out there. We're actually developing a new skill of probably practicing our needs, stating our needs. I would love it if you do this. I know we're not going to talk about, you know, the sexual desires and things like that, but what if you lean into that, right?
Yeah.
I would love it if, and just communicate. So that's one way, an example of rising, because you're building this muscle that's kind of a little weak, you know, that emotional flex muscle that's a little bit weak, but that's what we do in the rising, so that when we get into the magnify stage, we've got an emotional six pack, or whatever we want to call it. We've got that emotional strength to say, all right, if this relationship ends, or if it doesn't work out, I'm not going to go all the way back to a fall.
For sure.
And we can then from there start perhaps maybe sharing our dating woes with friends and not being ashamed of it, and actually proudly saying, hey, I'm single for this season, and 100%. Being okay with that. And that's the point of then getting into that thriving mindset, where we're not so kicked off of our heels into a fall, or the fall is not as hard as it used to be.
That's right. I love that. I love that so much. And what I can tell you guys too about how Nita's process, you know, when talking about flying forward, dovetails right into the dating process. I can give you some steps to take, right? If you've fallen, right? I've got a bad picker. I've never been in love. I've never had a good relationship. Whatever the suck has been that you've been in, let this be the time that you are ignited and become optimistic and tell yourself, you know what? Love will come to me. It's a when, it's not an if. And part of my ignition means I need to change some things up to find this person. And maybe I need some help. Maybe I'm going to take a course. Maybe I'm going to get a coach. Maybe I'm going to call Bella. Maybe I'm going to get Nita's book. Whatever it is, you're now igniting. And then you start to rise. From my perspective, you know who your high GHQ guy is for women that are looking for men. High and good husband qualities. That's our process. You are clear. You stop the madness of dating the next narcissist, the next avoidant. You're looking for someone who's going to take the knot out of your stomach, not give you butterflies. This person that's going to feel like the healthy home that the little you has always wanted, right? And then you're going to rise because you have a dating funnel. You have a profile that's actually attracting people because you are beautiful and you are putting yourself out there as this magnificent being that you are, not with these janky old iPhone photos that you've had sitting around in your iPhone or your Android for 4 years because you're just too lazy or reticent to change anything up and you don't want to invest, right? And then when you start to do these things, you start to magnify. Magnifying is so much goodness starts to come into your dating life. You have more people that you're dating. You don't settle. You are speaking your truth. You are dating from a place of authenticity. You're getting rid of the red flaggers. You're only letting good people in for repeat dates. And that's how your dating life starts to thrive. And when you are dating and you're having fun and you're open to the possibilities, guess what starts to happen then? The lid to your pot can arrive for you. Oof. And suddenly you're like, holy shit, this was worth it all. This was the meaning in my mess. I changed things up and now I've never been happier. I can't believe it. I would go to 10 different cities to be with my soulmate. Forget about dating across zip codes. Listen to what Nita did with her dating life, right? I'm not dating an Indian guy. Guess who she's married to? An Indian guy, right? I mean, go.
From India.
Figure. From India, no less, from the homeland, okay?
From the homeland.
Not an Indian like she and I that are basically like, we're fully Americanized with Indian heritages, right? And so remember,
never say never.
Exactly. Never, ever say never. You guys know the story of Andy and me dating. We were best friends for 3 years. We were friends for 6 years before that. And my dad would be like, how do you spend so much time with a guy? I'm like, pfft. It's like a girl. It's not like spending time with a guy. We're now married for 25 years and have two teenagers. Never say never, but you have to look in the mirror. You have to embrace the suck and you have to say, now what, right? How am I going to find the meaning in my mess and love my circumstances and get out of the victim mentality and take steps. Nita, you are the living, breathing manifestation for all that is beautiful. I'm so proud of you. You have grown so much since the first day I laid eyes on your beautiful face at Whole Foods. And to think that you're here being interviewed on my podcast because you wrote an amazing book is such a testament to you. Thank you for sharing your story and for sharing your methodologies with us for your book. And guys, I'm going to put a link to buy Nita's book in our show notes. And
amazing.
You are amazing. A podcast episode dropped on Nita's podcast called The Brave Table with me last week. So make sure you go in and you listen to that as well.
So fun.
And I adore you. Thank you for teaching us about the suck, the bounce, flying forward, for sharing your story and for helping inspire all of us to bounce a little higher this peak dating season.
Oh my gosh. You wrapped it in the most beautiful bow I've ever heard anybody. You're just so good. You're such a gift. And I'm so glad your listeners get to hear you week on a week basis. I loved this episode so much. Thanks for having me, love.
I love you. And guys, for peak dating season, if that didn't inspire the pants off of you to change some stuff in your dating life, I don't know what will. If you're done with the suck, please send an email to our website. Go to smartdatingacademy.com. It's the perfect time of year to fly forward. You guys, it's your time to ignite and rise and thrive. The busiest online dating day of the year is January 8th, 2023. Look at yourself, get out of your suck and start to fly forward. Sign up for a consultation with us. Get yourself a fairy godmother of dating because I know that it will make the biggest difference in your life that you've ever had. Until next week, I send you a big hug, a giant kiss, and lots of love and light. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.